Welcome to WISO Weekend, your weekly radio magazine on WISO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up later in the program, Community Voices producer Maddie Fix tells us about the sale of a building in the Columbus Short North District and how it's affected residents there. Up first, unintentional drug overdose deaths in Montgomery County for 2017 now stand at 499. That's as of September. The numbers came out in a monthly update from Public Health Dayton and Montgomery County Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services, or ADAMIS. In September, there were 33 accidental drug overdoses logged by the county. Those deaths have been trending down since a spike in May when there were 80 deaths recorded. At the meeting, Health Commissioner Jeff Cooper said despite the downward trend, local health agencies would continue to fight the epidemic.
We are investing in controlling illegal supply on the street, enhancing our prevention efforts, expanding the distribution of naloxone, as well as expanding our syringe services programs.
They're also expanding treatment of addiction through various rehabilitation programs. They say the lower numbers are likely a result of the availability of the anti-overdose drug Narcan, but also believe prevention and addiction treatment programs are working. ADAMIS Executive Director Helen Jones-Kelly says a decrease in the stigma of addiction is also playing a role in the reduced numbers.
People are talking more openly. As people share their stories, then other people start paying attention to that. It takes the mystery out, and we begin to share ideas around resources, who are we using as treatment providers, and it takes some of that isolation away so that we can see more people come forward to access services.
Jones-Kelly emphasized the importance of recovery housing in the treatment of addiction. The county currently has 7 recovery housing programs with 9 locations in the county. The homes have a bed capacity for 30 women and 25 men over the age of 18 who have demonstrated a commitment to recovery-oriented lifestyles. At the meeting, she introduced several individuals who are going through treatment and aftercare in the housing programs. Now on WISO Weekend, we're going to hear those young people tell their stories, and as someone in the audience, I can tell you that it clearly took a lot of courage for them to share their experiences. First, we'll hear from 33-year-old Corey Cabara of Lima. He says he came to Dayton more than a year ago to find sobriety.
Hello, everybody. When the ADAMIS board asked me to do this, they said I'd be helping a lot of people. So I was really pleased to accept the invitation. But then she said the entire Montgomery County would be watching me. So pardon me if I'm a little nervous. My name is Corey Cabara. I am 33 years old. I am from Lima, Ohio. I've been in the Dayton area since August 25th of last year. I am a recovering heroin addict and alcoholic. I came to Dayton to find sobriety, and what I found was recovery. I went through a 9-month treatment program at the Salvation Army around in South Patterson. I completed that, and I wanted to continue growing as a man, so I decided to join the Joshua Recovery Houses. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. We have 4 houses around the Dayton area, and we're actually opening one in Troy, Ohio right now. What I really like about Joshua Recovery is the structure. Everything we do, every single day of the week, we have something to do. And at first it can seem overwhelming, but there's a plan behind all of it, and it's just learning how to deal with life on life terms in a positive way, and how to be outstanding members of the society and helping others in the process. There's a good balance. We have an outstanding balance. It is a spiritual, faith-based program, but we also were involved in 12-step groups. We work full-time. We start building relationships with not only our family and our friends, but with the entire community as well, and that's huge. And we also have a lot of accountability. And the guys in my house, I can go to them about anything. And they're all family members to me. They would literally do anything to help me. And it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And I do the same thing. I'm a house steward with Joshua Recovery. I look after one of their houses about 5 minutes from here, actually. I also do transportation. I'm like their personal free Uber driver. I enjoy it, though. It's all service work to me, and it's just my way of giving back what was so freely given to me. And all it took was a little bit of surrender, God, and a fabulous community of people. I know this epidemic is troublesome, to say the least, but there's hope. There is so much hope. And like you were saying, there's so many different programs out there that are just begging for people just to come and accept the help, and it's possible. I've seen guys come into Joshua Recovery Ministries with nothing, and I swear to you, nothing but the clothes on their back, and they leave with custody of their kids. And that's just the reality of it. If we just surrender and accept what's being handed to us, and it's amazing things. And I want all you people to know that your efforts are much appreciated, and to not lose hope. You know? If I could help one person, man or woman, find what I found today, then this is all worth it. And that's all I have. I'm gonna pass it on to Andrew. Thanks, guys.
Hi, my name's Andrew Ledford. I don't know how I'm going to be able to follow that up, but yeah, I'm 34 years old. I'm also in the Joshua Ministries. I have 6 months clean. You know, it's been a long, hard road, but people didn't give up on me. And going into treatment is just a start. It gave me a good foundation. It gave me a good head start. But then going into a place like Joshua Ministries, number one, they've allowed me to build this personal relationship with God, that without Him, none of this stuff is possible. I have people around me, just like Corey just said, that are, you know, we're like a brotherhood there. We would do anything for each other. You know, I have people around me that when I'm holding something in, they can tell that there's something wrong. So I have people that's holding me accountable. Since I've been at Joshua Ministries, not only do I have the opportunity to serve in the community, we do a free breakfast Saturday mornings at Fort McKinley. I also got a job, full-time job at Fort McKinley. And I'm very blessed today. Without Joshua Ministries, I would not be here right now. I think it's vital that, you know, number one, if I don't believe that I'm powerless over this disease and admit to that step one, then none of this, I mean, it doesn't matter anyways. But as soon as I took that first step, and I believe that if an individual goes into a treatment center, I would stay longer than 30 days. I stayed for 4 months at mine. You know, give their all into the treatment center. Leave with a certificate. Go into a transitional living. If you put that, God, transitional living, and a 12-step program, all those things combined, I believe, I know that I can stay clean. And I see a lot of guys out here that are just, I mean, these it's great. I'm so blessed. As nervous as I am, like, to be up here, I would never think in a million years I would be doing something like this. That's all I got.
My name is Sarah Northrup. I'm 31 years old. I have battled addiction from the ages of 13 to 30. Today I stand 10 months clean. I made the choice to surrender my life from drugs January 2017 of this year after losing a loved one to suicide in relation to drugs. The lifestyle I engaged in not only led me down the darkest of places, but I abandoned everything that I truly cared about, such as myself and my son. Prior to my surrender, I became divorced. I lost legal custody of my son. I served a prison sentence and was in and out of jails. I was homeless, penniless, hopeless, a walking, truly lifeless shell in active addiction. I had no sense of pride or self-worth. My confidence was non-existent. I continued to mask the pain with drugs. I was recovered not once, but twice with Narcan. I have became before you today as a glimpse of hope that just maybe you could see the power and importance of the recovery process. The Adamus Board has funded many homes here in the Miami Valley, allowing others and myself to have the opportunity to regain themselves and self-worth. I currently live at the Lighthouse Project, ran by Melanie in Leland Woods, located in this Dayton area. The Lighthouse Project has recently opened male and female faith-based homes, as well as on the verge of expanding to reach out to those of us who truly want to get back to productive lives in the real world. Recovery housing isn't just about catering to the addict, but making a once broken man or woman, son and daughter, fathers and mothers dig within themselves, soul search into dreams and goals back into reality. This isn't an overnight process. I myself battled with depression, nightmares, swarmed in grief by not only the loss of my partner, but those who've lost their lives to drug overdose in this Dayton and Miami Valley area. I not only went through a six-month lockdown rehab, but upon release, I chose to commit to living arrangements with the Lighthouse Project. Day one of my release, I made the effort into the first day into the journey of the rest of my life. This is possible with the support from the Adamus Board and networking with recovery houses. When I arrived at this location, I was greeted with support and the ability to be rested and assured with peer support and guidance to work out legal obligations due to past mistakes that I made while in active addiction. While here, I have spoken out to the EMT first responders and firefighter crews, allowing them the opportunity to see the positive outcome in the saving of my life through Narcan. I work 12 steps through NA and AA. I also work alongside Ryan Fraley, going into rehabs in the greater Dayton area, speaking to those who are still fighting the battle of addiction currently. I was granted the opportunity to be employee at the same home that has given me my life back. Without homes such as these, I may have never been able to have a place to become grounded and centered, to sit still long enough to make out clearly the right path and direction I wanted to follow. I will continue to give back and tell my experiences, not just for me, but to show that no matter the depth in which we've created hollow grounds for ourselves, we rise above and carry a stronger, with more meaningful power than ever before message of hope. I just ask that you be open-minded in considering the benefits that the cities and schools, our children, and the once broken homes could gain by allowing those like myself the opportunity to become clean and to seek out others who still suffer and are a part of the voice needed to break the chain of addiction. Once and for all, to better ourselves and to stand with those who are looking for a new way out. Thank you for allowing me the chance to tell just a small part of who I am and see that I'm no longer who I was. Let me be a brief example of what's to come with support with the Adamus Board and recovery houses such as the Lighthouse Project. And I just wanted to give a special thanks to Women's Therapeutic Court with Judge Wiseman for making it possible for me to keep coming back. Thank you.
That was Sarah Fowler Northrup, along with Andrew Ledford and Corey Kabara, three young people who are just some of the thousands of people dealing with opiate addiction. We wish them all the best on their road to recovery. The efforts spoke of earlier by Public Health Dayton and Adamus are part of the Community Overdose Action Team. The community-wide program was established last year to address the opioid heroin epidemic in Montgomery County. Since then, more than 100 health and social service agencies in the county have joined the program. Following the press conference, it was a quick trip into the next room where I sat down with Rich Isaacson, special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration and public information officer for Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky, and Andrea Hoff, director of prevention and early intervention with Adamus. We talked about the collaboration they're working on together. First, here's Rich Isaacson to talk about the DEA's work with local agencies.
Since the opioid epidemic has surfaced over the last 10 years, the DEA, I think, and law enforcement in general has evolved in some degree, in that we recognize that we have such a large drug use and opioid epidemic specifically, such a problem here, that we need to approach this problem from more of a holistic approach. And so what has come out of that is the development of the DEA 360 strategy, trying to focus on this problem from 360 degrees, from all angles. And so we're trying to work with professionals from prevention and education and treatment and recovery, along with law enforcement, so we can attack this epidemic from all angles. And that's what we're trying to do. And Dayton, Ohio was chosen as one of the 8 cities over the past 2 years because of a lot of the issues that this region has faced. And so that's why we are devoting resources and trying to partner to a large degree with the initiatives that are already existing here in this region.
With the DEA, I think most people hear of the organization when there are large drug busts, big things going down, but your work with local communities has always been there. But you mentioned it's a game changer, the opioid crisis.
It is, certainly. We recognize that if we're going to have long-term success in reducing opioid use and the problems, the ancillary crime, and all the other societal costs associated with the opioid epidemic, that we need to work with the other professionals. And I think the research has shown, and Andrea can certainly speak to this, that prevention over the long haul and public messaging, when you start early enough and when people are young enough, before the problem starts, get the public messaging out and do as much prevention work, substance abuse prevention work at a young age, and try to address the problem consistently with young people before they have dependency and addiction issues later in life.
And, of course, that's the basis of the 360 strategy. And you mentioned that Dayton was one of 8 cities so far where this is taking place. Let's talk about the initial rollout and successes that you've had from that.
Right. So, really, this is a way to get the message out to the community that we're here. We're trying to enhance programming that already exists and build on that. So certainly Montgomery County and some of the surrounding counties already have coalitions in place that are responding to the opioid crisis. But DEA wants to come in and try to enhance those relationships and build upon those and hopefully provide some resources. And if there are silos existing between law enforcement and prevention and treatment, that we can try to break those down to some degree and really strengthen some of those relationships. So that after, we have a large summit that's coming up that I hope we can talk about here shortly, but even after that summit, that we can have continued consistent programming, prevention programming for the community.
Now that the 360 strategy has come to Dayton, tell us what this program will look like.
Right off the bat, there is a large-scale event on October 16th. We're calling it a rally, and this we're hoping to rally the community to be able to talk about the opioid problem and address the opioid problem. And somewhat, it's a serious topic, but we're trying to bring some excitement to this, and that's why we're calling it a rally, and we've got some headliners that are going to be speaking at this event, and it's geared towards college-age young adults, maybe even high school students and their families, just to learn more about the opioid issues and also make it kind of a fun event. So that's kind of a big rollout push for this 360 strategy here in Dayton, and I think there's a couple of good headliners that are speaking at this event.
And Andrea, so let's talk about Adamus's involvement with the Drug Enforcement Agency. Is this new for your agency?
You know, we focus on doing collaborations all the time because when you look at the community need, and we have 535,000 people in Montgomery County, that there's no way we can do it alone. And so the one thing that we always do is we partner with other local communities, we partner with our state and our federal partners, and any time that there's an initiative coming in that we know is really going to benefit the community and promote things like mental wellness and the prevention of substance abuse and addiction, we are right there to do that. And we also really want to make sure that we're not duplicating efforts. So when there are initiatives that are happening, but we have someone else coming in wanting to do the same thing, that we are just a stronger force when we work together on these initiatives. We have a stronger voice. We have the ability to pull in more citizens, more young people when we work together. And so that really is our role here at the Adamus Board, is to create those connections within the community, both with other county partners, but also with our general citizens, to engage them in the initiatives and the events that are coming up through the DEA 360 initiative.
We attended a press conference earlier today with Adamus. There was some good news in the fact that there is a lot going on. There's some funding coming down. Montgomery County is sitting pretty well with its human services levy to be able to deliver programs on the local level. But we are by no means toward the end of this crisis.
Yeah, and the truth is, even when you look at this crisis, if you look historically, we really have not ever not been in a drug epidemic, right? This is the opiate epidemic is one where we are seeing fatalities at a level and a rate that we've never seen before, and it is absolutely tragic. But when that goes away, the next drug epidemic is right around the corner. And what that means is that we have to stop being reactionary, and we really have to focus on prevention, because there are skills and tools and resources that people can engage in that are going to prevent them not just from becoming another statistics with the overdose epidemic and the opiate epidemic, but, you know, our next one might be methamphetamines or it might be cocaine. Those same skills and tools that they learn is going to prevent them from the next thing that's coming down the pike as well.
With the 360 event coming up, what are folks going to experience?
For the actual 360 strategy, there's going to be one of the headliners is Alexis Gomez, who was a local woman that appeared on American Idol, and she's going to help bring some of the excitement to this. And there's going to be some motivational speakers along with information about the opioid crisis. So we're hoping bringing people like Alexis to the stage is going to help generate some excitement about this discussion, and also some motivational speakers. We have an Afghan Army veteran who was also a DEA agent named Joe Persante, and he's going to give his message, a very inspiring message to the group, and so we think it's going to be an exciting event, and it's real easy to register. You go to eventbrite.com, you punch in Dayton, current events in Dayton, and you'll see the Power of You rally pop up on the Eventbrite website, and we hope people take the time and effort to register for this important event, because you're going to learn strategies to help your community improve and fight this epidemic. Everyone can do something to help fight this issue, and prevention is key, and generating conversations with your family members and your friends about this problem is a key to helping combat this. And it's a great event, and hopefully we can get people to show up and experience it.
So this is not just an event for social service agencies, workers, people on the front lines of this. This is a calling for a grassroots effort on this.
Certainly. We're trying to bring people in from all demographics, all parts of the community to come in and take part of this. And it's at the Nutter Center on October 16th. It's a Monday evening. And we just hope people will take the time and the effort to be a part of this very important experience. Because we do believe that prevention is key to help slow this epidemic. And as Andrea mentioned a minute ago, it's prevention for all drug use. We're trying to give people the power and the information to make good choices throughout their life, no matter what the substance is there. We know right now that 80% of all current heroin users started out by misusing prescription drug opioids. And so we need to talk about the dangers of misusing these prescription painkillers and let people know that, hey, these are dangerous substances. Perception of risk might be a little lower for prescription drugs. Young people might be more likely to experiment with painkillers because they think it's a medicine. We need to make sure they understand that misusing painkillers is every bit as deadly as misusing illegal drugs, and that's just part of the message.
You're absolutely right, Rich. I mean, we also know that people who misuse prescription medications are 40 times more likely to eventually abuse heroin. And then they're going down that path that we know is just so dangerous and so often ends in a person's life ending. And so our board, Adamus Board, has also started a program called the Prescription Medication Safety Project. And what that does is we have individuals who are trained in what's called the Generation RX program. It is a curriculum-based training which teaches people how to have a healthy relationship with their medications, but it also teaches them things like proper storage of their medications so it cannot be diverted for abuse purposes, and how to properly dispose of their medications if they want to get rid of that. These are free trainings. We also hand out free medication deactivation disposal pouches, which is one way to safely get rid of your medications that you are no longer using. Right now, you can go to any Goodwill store in Montgomery County and get a free medication pouch. We ask that people just get rid of their medications if they are not using them.
And another very large DEA-sponsored event, twice a year we do the Prescription Drug Take-Back Program. And coming right up on Saturday, October 28th, will be the next Prescription Drug Take-Back Program. When we anonymously survey folks that misuse prescription drugs, the most common way that people get their hands on prescription drugs is from their own families or their friends or friends' families. So a very real, tangible thing that people in the community can do is get rid of your unwanted, expired, unused prescription drugs. Take them back. Dispose of them, whatever proper method that you have. But one of those would be during the DEA Prescription Drug Take-Back Program on Saturday, October 28th. Real easy. Go to DEA.gov, click on the Got Drugs banner, type in your zip code, and all the take-back locations populate right there.
And, of course, we've got the 360 Power to You event coming up at the Nutter Center on October 16th. It begins at 6 p.m.
That's correct. We would love to have a large crowd there and get as much bang for our buck, so to speak. We want to spread this message to as wide of an audience as possible. And we can beat back this opioid crisis, but it takes all of us working together. And that's why we were trying to attack this from 360 degrees.
Richard Isaacson, Special Agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. Rich, thanks so much for your time and the information.
Well, thank you so much for covering this event. It's very important to DEA and all of our partners in this 360 strategy here in Dayton.
We've also been speaking with Andrea Hoff, Director of Prevention and Early Intervention with Adamus here in Montgomery County. Andrea, thanks so much.
Yeah, and thanks so much for having this important conversation. You know, we need to have conversations about prevention and how we stop people from progressing down to abusing and becoming addicted to substances and all the consequences that happen with that, instead of just having conversations about how to get people help once they've already developed that illness.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks so much for joining us. Columbus's Short North District was previously known for urban decay, but it's now home to art galleries, small businesses, and creative capital. It was also home to Bollinger Tower, which until recently served as public housing for senior citizens. Community Voices producer Maddie Fix tells us about the sale of the building and how that has affected its residents.
In early 2017, Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, CMHA, announced that Bollinger Tower had been sold for $14 million to the Schiff Capital Group. The building had not been for sale. Since 2010, the building served a senior citizen Section 8 public housing using a voucher-based system. This spring, because of the building sale, Bollinger Tower's 100 senior residents had to move. 68-year-old Chuck Champlin was one of those residents. He lived in Bollinger Tower for 3 years. I met him where the building stretches up at the corner of Buttles and High Streets in the Short North. Chuck is one of the few who found alternative public senior housing in central Columbus. Many of his friends did not find public housing, moving instead to private housing using Section 8 vouchers.
They're scattered all over the city. Majority of them use vouchers, yes. And the majority of them, at least the ones I've spoke with, there's a lot of unhappiness.
Why are they unhappy? What is it that's making them unhappy?
Well, they felt like they was, in a sense, kind of rushed out and really didn't get to kind of see or understand where they were moving. So some of them moved in places that wasn't essentially ready for people to live in. What they felt as if, you know, they just brushed us off. And yes, in a sense, but no, I'm personally happy where I moved to, but where I live now is, I call them the seniors. They're older and very friendly and very nice.
Columbus Alive journalist Joel Oliphant covered Bollinger Tower in late April. I talked with Joel about what happened. It turns out the housing crisis is not specific to seniors. The waiting list for Section 8 vouchers is currently at 17,000 households. And growing.
Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority has been underfunded for decades. I think there's a direct relationship between that underfunding and the number of people who are on a waiting list for affordable housing in Columbus. And so this is just kind of one of the examples of what happens when you don't have enough affordable housing to go around.
Joel says that the sale gave CMHA some much-needed revenue, but it also meant they had to find homes for 100 senior citizens.
To their credit, I mean, these 100 senior citizens are also not being booted onto the street. They worked with them every step along the way to find housing for them, so I don't want to overstate the kicking out. But they're not being housed in the building that they love and that they call home and in this community of people that a lot of them have been around for many years.
Joel suggested I follow up with an authority on the subject, Bobby Garber. Garber spoke with me as the loaned executive for the Affordable Housing Alliance of Central Ohio. Bobby says that senior citizens, immigrants, and African Americans are most affected by the housing crisis. Senior needs are growing because the senior citizen population is growing. I asked Garber what she thinks the future of public senior housing looks like in Columbus.
You know, one of the models that I think folks are figuring out how to make work is affordable assisted living. And from the Housing Alliance point of view, addressing housing for seniors both through development of service-enriched housing like affordable assisted living or through vouchers or rent assistance is a priority. That's a priority group.
It's only been a few months since Bollinger Tower closed, and the former residents are still adjusting. With Section 8 vouchers, these seniors are able to move annually if need be.
You can actually move every year with a tenant-based voucher, so you don't have to reapply, or you do have to be approved for that unit.
Chuck Champlin again.
A fair amount of people who lived in the building maybe lived here for 25-plus years, and they really became rooted in the neighborhood and everything else. Yeah, I just hope eventually things will work out for them and they'll become comfortable where they're at. If not, when their year's lease is up, I hope they're able to take the time and seek out some place that they really think they'll be happy at.
For WISO Community Voices, I'm Maddie Fix.
Maddie Fix is a graduate of WISO's 2017 Community Voices class. To learn more about training opportunities, visit our website at wiso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks so much for joining us. That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on WISO. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.